thank you everybody for coming. Get as comfortable as you can under the circumstances, and also feel free, like, if we're talking about a work and you're like, I didn't look that closely at that, navigate the space, do whatever you want, be comfortable. Some of you have came to Henry's last show and his last talk, and I'm glad that you're here today, because it'll be cool to just sort of, it's cool to now be in a position with the gallery where we're having repeat audiences for repeat shows with artists and seeing what they're into. We're fully interruptible. If we're glazing over something that you wish we had gone into more detail on, or you just have feedback or a question, just throw the hand up and we'll do that. And I guess the place to start, for those of you who don't know, this is Henry Paul Braillard. This is his second solo show at the gallery, second solo show ever. Until we started working together, he'd been showing in group shows kind of all over in China, Dusseldorf, New York. And then his first show at the gallery was really well received. It got a beautiful write-up by Jenna Crowder in the Rib. So I'm just thrilled to see where the work has gone from here. And really to kind of mostly have a conversation about, I'm really interested in how the experience of looking at your work in the last show impacted what happened in the studio to result in these paintings. But I guess before that, because there are some people here who are probably less familiar with your practice, I guess the place to start would be that we're looking at interior scenes, and to sort of talk about where that comes from for you in your practice, why you keep going back to it, and maybe even some of the process details about how you're working with your source imagery.
Yeah. First, thanks for having me. So happy to be back. Happy to do another talk. Thank you everybody for coming out. The interior scenes came from growing up in Los Angeles and growing up in very different homes, being raised by my mother in one home that was like a very modern style, and she took a lot of care with it and collected mid-century furniture and was very considerate about how her home looked. And then the other side was being raised in my grandmother's house. And that house was a much older style, and she also took great care in like preserving things that she had, the furniture pieces that she had probably bought out of a catalog at Sears in the 80s, you know, but like has spent her hard-earned money on and really took the time to make those pieces last. And seeing the two houses and seeing those two spaces and spending a lot of time in those two spaces where we grew up in maybe not the most ideal neighborhood, so there wasn't a lot of like playing outside. It was a lot of like inside time, and it was always kind of stuck in my mind. And then when I started going to art school, I was making fully abstract paintings that I just thought, you know, were the coolest thing. And then I took a class with a painter, Jack Mendenhall, who's a photorealist painter, and he does lots of interior scenes, lots of poolside scenes and things like that. And he was a painter that my mother, who also does watercolor paintings, had books on him and things like that growing up. So I knew his name immediately. I enrolled in his class, painting too. And we went to his studio one day, halfway through the semester, I believe. And I turned the corner to go in his studio with the class, and I look and I'm confronted with this large painting on the back wall that was a painting that he had gotten back from a collector to do some conservation himself on. And that painting was the cover of a book that my mom had always had out. That was like photorealist, like American photorealist painters. This Jack Mendenhall painting was on the cover. And so I had stared at that for so long and been like, you know, how do you do that? And then seeing it in person, it had a big effect on me. So I then went back to the studio in school and started kind of looking at my source material and realized that I had always been so attracted to this interior scene, and I had been collecting photos of interiors, and I had been collecting books on interiors and things like that, and I decided to just maybe dive into it more. And I realized that the abstract paintings I was making that I wasn't necessarily so happy with, I realized that I could use the structure of an interior space, break it down into geometry, into its simple forms, and then play around within those forms. So that's kind of where it started, the short version. And I have just like really gone in deeper and deeper, amassing source material. And the paintings, of course, have morphed a lot over the years with like what I'm attracted to and different elements here and there. But it's mostly just been finding an image and taking the image into the studio, editing it in my head or editing it on the actual image with some paint, and then sketching it up, choosing a size that I think will, you know, reflect the composition well, laying the base composition out in paint, and then putting the image aside, and then like the game begins. Like you just, it's just a lot of, it's like searching for a balance, I think, in all the paintings, and paint, and just grabbing randomly into my pile of paints, whether it's acrylic, flash, graphite, colored pencil, pastel, chalk, spray paint, anything, using it and then painting furiously, stepping back, maybe coming back the next day and being like, okay, I ruined that painting. Okay, so now it's like time to fix it. You know, and like, oh, that was nice, let's try that again. Oh, no, gotta fix that now. And so it's this constant push and pull and painting myself into a corner, painting out of it, and then I realize I'm in another corner, painting out of that. So
yeah, and I was sort of interested to hear you talk about like the two different home environments that you had going up. Mm-hmm. Like that's like an interior scene that is very psychically charged. Mm-hmm. Whereas I feel like in these paintings, like none of them are of any of your own domestic space, right?
No.
Yeah, they're all like found images from like flea markets, like mm-hmm. old photo albums and stuff like that. So it's like, in a way, like it could be anybody's space, like there's no psychic investment in it.
Yeah.
But if that's not how you're selecting the image, like what's the criteria you're looking for when you're like, that really could be a painting?
I think it's like a mix of immediate attraction to it. There's something in it that I'm immediately attracted to, and I just want to spend more time with this image. And also seeing if compositionally it will work as a painting, because I have a lot of images that I'll just collect, and I have a large photo album, and one half is just labeled, I think it's labeled like beautiful photos, and they're all the photos that I love but that I know I can't make paintings from because it's just not going to work for a painting. The other half is all like source images, so they're all photos that I know I can make paintings from or that I have made paintings from. So I think when I see an image, I could usually tell quickly if it's going to work or if it's not going to work. And the ones that do work, it then turns into cropping and seeing what happens. But it's usually that like immediate moment where like if I immediately get like a charge from the image, immediately like the image tells me something, you know, and I see something going on in it that I'm attracted to that I want to like really get to know, then it goes into the work pile.
And now that you've been working in this way for a few years, do you find, like, are you starting to see patterns develop in terms of like, okay, I like that. Oh, of course I like that because here's this thing that I keep doing in my paintings.
Yeah.
And like, what are those things, if you can think of any?
I think those things are patterns and patterning. And that's one of the things I realized about my last show, and then even more so with this show, with the paintings that we chose. I had an image of them, I was texting you images of them, and I was looking at my camera roll in my phone, and it's all these thumbnails of all the 9 paintings that we sent to the show. And I realized all of them have this structured pattern in them at some point. And usually it's like a large portion of the painting, like for instance, this sort of lattice work in this one, you know, or the checkers in this one. And I realize that that's something I'm super attracted to because it is so structural. And even if it is loose, I consider this one like a loose pattern, but it's still just like shows this hard structure that I think I need in the pieces and that I look for in the pieces. So I think that's one thing. Also like brown, there's a lot of brown in the paintings. I love brown. Mm-hmm. And so Yeah.
On the subject of color, I feel like every time I go to your studio and I see the source images you're working from, they're in black and white.
Yeah.
Have you actually stripped out the color before you use it as a source image so you can try and like remove that from your headspace, or are they just naturally black and white images?
Most of them are color. I will blow them up, but I photocopy them to blow them up at like a UPS store that's like around the corner from my apartment, and I'll photocopy them in black and white so that I'm not trying to paint the image so verbatim. Mm-hmm. I've noticed that the ones that I'll photocopy and I'll paint from the actual photo, which is usually, you know, like 5 by 5 inches or 4 by 4 or something. The ones that I do paint from the actual photo and it is in color, I'll make a sort of more predictable painting in my mind, but the ones that are, I do from a black and white image, it's more of like what I'm thinking, it's more me in the piece, and they tend to go really extreme in one direction, and then I have to like scale it way back because there's a point with most of the paintings where there's like every color in my studio is on that canvas, and I'll look at it and be like, okay, there's a lot of paint on this canvas, but like, oh my god, this looks terrible, I can never show this to anybody, and then, you know, half of it is removed, a little bit's put back, that's removed, a little bit's put back, and then that starts.
Yeah. You talked about the abstract paintings you were making, and that we had sort of more purely abstract paintings in the last show. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the thing that I really learned over the course of the last show is like, you actually fundamentally are an abstract painter. Mm. These are just structures around which you're hanging these like moments of abstraction.
Yeah.
But we didn't include any purely abstract paintings in this show. Like, I'm wondering if as you've been working, you've been feeling the urge to make those kinds of paintings less.
I think if anything, after the last show, I've made more interior paintings and a few purely abstract paintings, but I haven't made, I mean, you saw the first time you came to my studio, I was like, here's interiors, here's like stripe paintings, here's a painting of an airplane, here's this, here's that. And I showed you all these different like bodies of work that I've been working on in this like scatterbrain way that I work in the studio. And I think after the last show, seeing that it was so like, it charged me up so much to see the work that I wanted to just make more and more interior paintings. So to answer your question, I am still making the abstract paintings, but I'm making them more within the other paintings now.
Mm-hmm.
Which is something that I feel very like I want to push even farther. So small paintings within paintings, you know, or like this one up here that I finished, what, 2 days I think before I send it to you.
Yeah.
That red painting in the top, that wasn't there for the most of the life of this painting, and it was done. I put it in the rack, pulled it back out to show you when you came to the studio and realized, oh no, something needs to happen here. Mm-hmm. And then I knocked that in. Cause like, that's a painting that I would like to make. and that like, I would love to see. If I saw that painting at a thrift store, I'd probably buy it. You know, or like if I saw that painting somewhere, or if I saw some marks on the street that looked like that, I would like take a photo of it. You know, I'd like on the sidewalk or something, which I do a lot. But I like to take that and put it in there.
Yeah. And like on the subject of like looking and reference, one thing that I also learned in the last show was, and it like really expressed itself in the press release in terms of like, this is a Tarone moment, mm-hmm. this is a like Saul LeWitt moment, and mm-hmm. I like really discovered that like there is no, homage is not playing a role in your work.
Mm.
It's not like you're never interested in like spot the reference, and you're really trying to like move away from those things, but that you, you know, for your side hustle, like as an mm-hmm. art handler, like you're just constantly looking mm-hmm. at things. Is it still like a struggle in the studio to try and set that influence issue aside, or has it become more natural over time, or are you more comfortable with it now? Like, yeah, this looks like this, and I'm cool that people see that it looks like artist X, Y, or Z.
I think I've become more comfortable with it. It would be more work to ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be more work to constantly over critique myself, because I made a small Agnes Martin painting within my painting. You know, mm-hmm. and oh no, I can't do that. She, you know, she did that. She's a master. Like that's that I feel like is more debilitating than me making that mark or that painting within my painting because that's something I'm attracted to and that's something that I'm like deeply in love with. Yeah, it was just like I need to. When I go in the studio, I just work intuitively. Sometimes these things come out. There has been times where I've taken marks away because it's a little too in one direction. But most of the time it's just like painting is in my head at all times. And for my job, I'm looking at paintings all the time. And so when I go to the studio, there are things like, oh, I saw that Marc Grosjean painting, you know, today at work. And now, like, I want to use a palette knife a little bit. So, but, like, maybe I won't do it. But it's, like, that palette is in my head or something like that, and I'll just, like, play with it.
Do you think you'd, like, you know, say you become fabulously successful and no longer have to art handle? Do you think you would miss that aspect of it, though?
I think I would a little bit. I wouldn't miss the work of, the, like, actual work of art handling. It's a lot of work. But I would miss just, like, the exposure to it. And I do think that art handling is like a great job for an artist. It could pay the bills and you get to see stuff all over and you get to see and deal with all kinds of art and it exposes you to a whole nother world that you become a part of by being an artist. That I think a lot of artists, young and old and everyone maybe ignore to a certain extent. Hmm.
So we've been kind of dancing around it, but sort of what you saw on the last show and how mm-hmm. it impacted these paintings. And I have like a bunch of things I could throw out there, mm-hmm. but like if there's like one thing that really came to the surface that you saw on the show that you feel has most impacted how you're working now, like what might those one or two things be?
I think it was like a general dryness to the paintings. Like the surface of the paintings seemed very dry, and I know it's because I'm painting in acrylic and flash so much that it's naturally going to look very flat and dry, and I do make these very flat paintings, but I didn't know how extreme it was until I came in here to the show, and also I've just been paying more and more attention to like relationships that I can build within the pieces, mm-hmm. and like how one piece can talk to another piece with either motifs that I've repeated in pieces or scale or palette or, you know, things like that, or just like sort of how I'm feeling in a piece. So that I think was the biggest thing for me was just like the relationship and like the conversation that was happening wall to wall, piece to piece in the gallery for the first show. And I think it's happening again here in a nice way.
Yeah, I don't know that I thought the paintings were dry. I thought, but I do think that these are really loose. Like I feel yeah. like you really, like the, it's loose in a very like, I don't know, like, maybe you felt more confident after seeing that show and you're like, I can just make this area like really loose and washy. Mm-hmm. It doesn't need to have like the degree of finish that it had before, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I think that goes into it. Also it's in the previous show that those were paintings that sort of spanned maybe 2015, 2016 to 2018. Mm-hmm. And some canvases in that show I had worked on from 2015 to 2018. And so they were, there was like an element of time in there. Also some of the paintings in that show I had painted in two separate studios. And then the second in the main studio was the studio that was in my apartment. And now I've moved studios and these paintings were all executed within the past year, or at least finished within the past year. Maybe there's two paintings in the show that I started in 2017. I think that painting in the corner I started in 2017, or that canvas I started working on in 2017. And the only remnant you can see of it now is just the texture of the previous painting that was on there, which was another case of finishing a painting, hanging it up, pulling it out a couple months later, 6 months later, a year later, and then dipping a brush into gesso and just removing the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the other thing I really like was struck by when I was going to your studio is like the color palette has really shifted, I feel like. The blue china painting that has the square of that like pinkish salmon-y color, I feel like I was seeing a lot of that in your work before, and I've loved it, like that sort of Fairfield Porter, but it's also really like a Renaissance pink putty color is like very attractive to me. And it was interesting to me to see how it was really working in the paintings that were in the last show, and you're not doing it anymore. Like, what did you feel like you were, it was becoming a crutch? Were you just like not interested? Like, how did that work?
I think since that show, it's just, I've really wanted to just have like even more freedom with color in the studio. And so seeing those things, seeing sort of the repeated palettes, I got back to the studio and thought, I need to just like see how far I can go. I want to like use everything, and like use every color, and like let's just like see what happens. So.
And in terms of like not working in your apartment anymore, how do you think like having a dedicated space to go and paint has impacted things?
It's nice. I think that's also changed the paintings, because before, like in working in my apartment in the second bedroom, Abby, my girlfriend, would see the paintings all the time. People would come over and see the paintings and pop in, oh wow, this is what you're working on. And now in the studio, which like is in a basement, it's very removed from everything. I have no idea if the world still exists when I'm in there. There's no windows or anything like that. And working in that studio, I'm very much like in a little vacuum space, and I do feel like I'm now making paintings more for myself. No one sees them, which is kind of, it's a first for me, because I'm used to, you know, either painting in an academic setting or in a studio in a shared space, or in a studio that's, you know, in my home. So people are always going through all of those spaces and popping in and seeing stuff and making comments. And so now working completely alone, completely removed, I feel like I'm making more personal work, because I know the risk feels much lower, because nobody's going to see it, and I'm in total control of what people see now. So in that, there's more freedom for me to do more.
Yeah, I mean it's interesting in terms of like how much you. I think there are some artists who couldn't paint like that. Like, they would need more people checking in. I think there are people who definitely couldn't handle someone. Like Tad cannot handle me being in his space. Like, last year, he was using the upstairs space as a studio, and I think I drove him insane. But, yeah, like, I think finding that balance is... And I think maybe you want it to different degrees at different times. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. But I do really see these as being, like, really kind of wild in a way that shows, like, the presence of some real... solitude.
Yeah. I think solitude is nice. I like people. I like interaction. Don't get me wrong, but to a certain extent, and like and times when I am just completely alone in the studio for, you know, 8 hours, it's just like so. I also am driving myself crazy, but it's so nice to just have that total like exclusion from everything, and I'm just, there's one thing to do there. There's internet, but it's not that good, you know. There's no reception, so I can't have the radio on. It's like I'm just like listening to like some jazz album or something like that, or nothing, and I'm just like painting.
There's some particular moments in these paintings I wanted to talk about, and again, like, please interrupt with questions of any nature, or if there's a piece like you're like, what's going on with this section of this painting, because I love that there's so many painters here in the room. But the big gray one on the end, I think one of the things that kind of excited me about that painting is the bust that you left kind of sketched out, which I feel like I've only ever seen a figure in your paintings once. It's like a really old one that I think is like a self-portrait or something like that. But now there's this like ghost of a figure in this painting. Did you always intend to leave it just sketched out, or did you really think maybe I'll like take that challenge on?
That's an interesting painting. I was going to paint it in. I had a plan start to finish for that painting. And it was going to be more finished, you know, more like straightforward, like something like that is a very straightforward painting for me. But within the process of doing it, I felt really hesitant to throw too much paint on that canvas because there was things going on in it. There was some things happening that I felt like I couldn't touch, things that I knew I probably couldn't replicate without totally starting the painting over. So I slowed down that painting a lot, put it away, would take it out every now and then, had a lot of conversations about that painting and different stages of it being done with a friend of mine who's a painter in LA. So we're texting images back and forth and talking about it. And he told me like four iterations of it, don't touch it, leave it alone. And then I sent him a picture the next day, oh, look what I did to it. And he's like, all right, it's nice, but oh my God, don't touch it. There's crazy shit going on in here. But I showed it to you, I believe, in a less finished state. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to have it in the show, so I took a day, I put it on the wall in my studio before I like went home that night after you left, cleaned the studio up, left, came back the next day. So it was the first thing I saw. It was the only thing I was going to see, and I just spent a day with it and painted on it a little bit here and there and spent a lot of time just staring at it and kind of doing other stuff around the studio. And some things sort of popped out to me of what to do. I think I was watching, I told Ted this story last night, I was watching a stand-up comedy show on my laptop because I'll listen to stand-up comedy a lot, like in the studio. I don't listen to the news or anything that's going to like fuck me up. I just listen to like fun stuff. So I was listening to stand-up comedy in the studio, and it's a show, and they perform in a strip club in LA. And so the strip club has these like vanity lights like all around the bar and around like a photo of like a stripper and, you know, like in the background, in the foreground. And I noticed from watching it, I'm like trying to listen to the jokes, I'm trying to watch it, but I'm staring at these lights, these like vanity lights, and the camera abstracted them so much, so at times they would be really tight and you could see each bulb. Other times they'd be so out of focus and it was these big fuzzy dots, like strings of fuzzy dots. So I was looking at it and I thought, God, that's so beautiful how it just was cutting the like visual screen. It was just like cutting it into these like strips with these lights. And I thought, God, that's like, that's really great. So that's how I came up with like the doing these strips on there, and I did that after I had done some spray paint thing on it, and those two last moves kind of finished that painting.
I love that they're strip club vanity lights because I thought they were pearls, like something your grandmother would wear.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, strippers wear pearls too. I guess
strippers do wear pearls.
Yeah,
they're both very important. Pearls and vanity lights.
Yeah. And then the other one painting I thought I would want to talk about just personally for myself is, so this painting, we weren't sure if it was going to come. Like you were really like on the fence about whether it was done or not. And, you know, I never want anything to leave an artist's studio until they're done with it. And I don't believe in telling people how to finish their paintings either. Mm-hmm. But the thing that was really funny in the course of you finishing that painting is, so you can see the black in the center towards the right, there's a different finish than the black on the left. And where the shinier black is on the right, that was a continuation of this sort of white polka dot motif. And the funny thing is, that was like my favorite moment in the painting. And you took it away, and you made the painting better. Like that is what the painting needed, which for me was like so exciting because it just, again, like speaks to like the strength and the talent of what you're doing. But I have a theory about why that move made sense, but I'm curious to hear from you what happened there. Like why that was the thing that it needed.
It was just a very clunky object for me. And it was in the direct center of the painting. It was like what the composition was like leading to. And I would stare at that point every time I looked at that painting, and it was the reason why I hated that painting, was that sort of like peak.
So my favorite part of the painting
was
your least favorite.
Was my least favorite part of the painting.
Yeah. And, I like that.
And I knew, you know, it's gotta go, but like, how do I take it out? Do I take out all the polka dots? Do I do this? Do I do that? And I had all these plans for it. I just started painting on it and took it out and realized it seemed to get stronger on the bottom. This geometric outline with the polka dot motif inside of it seemed to be more structured after I took out the softer shape.
Yeah.
So it was like purely formal.
Yeah.
Nothing personal.
There's definitely that. There's also like, again, like I love... And I don't know how this would read to other people who hadn't seen it in the prior state, but to me, I think it is pretty obvious that shiny black is canceling something that is underneath it. But I guess I realized the reason it wouldn't have been right to leave it the way it was is I was having such like a metaphoric reaction to it.
Yeah.
Like I was like, oh, it's like a mountain or it's like Augustan Klansman. Like I was really getting associated with it.
Yeah.
And like that just wouldn't have been good.
Yeah, which like the Klansman thing I also thought about, and I love those Augustan paintings. And I thought about that after I did it, but it was so much a part of everything else. I thought, oh, maybe no one else is going to see that. So it's nice that someone did see it, even though it doesn't exist anymore. it was just had to go, but I was happy to remove it. And something I try and do a lot is when I do have to remove something, I want the viewer to know that I removed something. I want the viewer to know that maybe I masked out something, you know, like I don't want there to be these secrets in the painting. It's like show your work, you know, in math class, like put the entire process onto the finished product.
Yeah, and I feel like you do that, and one of the reasons I find your work so compelling, you do it in a way, like showing your work could come off really condescending. Like, we all know those painters that are really showing you how hard they're working, and I almost feel like as a viewer, like, talked down to, like, I'm like, I get it, you can paint, I'm not stupid. So to find a way to do it where the work is shown, but it's very transparent and almost like kind of nonchalant, I think is one of the things I find like most interesting about. And I feel like you've become even more nonchalant with it than you were before. Like there were some really tricky, elegant, refined, precise ways you were showing the work in the prior paintings. Mm-hmm. And here I think it's just very straightforward. You seem like very comfortable showing.
Yeah. It. Yeah, I think so. And I think that in these paintings, that small tricky element has been maybe zoomed out into just larger spaces of color, because I think I was so interested in, after seeing the last show, using more color and building color relationships within the paintings, and building up palettes and reducing palettes and things like that. So it's turned into like, I want to use this blue, so I'm going to put it here so that it's like a little signifier. It's going to pull your eye up that way. But then you're not going to forget that there's teal down here, so you're going to look down there too. So it's just less deep, or not less detail, but detail in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I
have
a question?
Yeah, go for it.
I have a question. No, this one. So it's awesome to see your work
and
to hear you talk about it. I'm curious about the light in the work.
Mm-hmm.
It's this washed out sort of what I see as LA light.
Mm-hmm.
It could also be digital light, but I don't read it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a conscious? I always wonder if artists are conscious of the light, or painters of the light that they put in the paintings, because they're from a particular place.
Yeah.
It floods in anyway.
Yeah, yeah. I think that for me, I grew up in that LA light. And so I think for me, it naturally goes into the work. It is what I am very attracted to it still. Also, it does have to do with some of the source images I'm using, which were amateur photographers shooting a Christmas photo or a holiday photo with a flash inside of what might be like a dark 70s kind of room or something like that. And so that naturally washes everything out. And I'm very attracted to those moments when everything is so washed out, is like so bright. So yeah, that maybe answers the question.
Yeah, and you have a studio out in LA that you go paint in sometimes too. So you're like,
yeah.
Also growing up in LA, like but I don't go back very often.
Mm-hmm.
The last time I went back, I was like, whoa, the light here. Like, I totally forgot it because I hadn't seen it in so long.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like, almost crashing on the freeway all the time because I was so burnt out. Another question I had was, like, so, like, you're having a real brown moment, and I love it.
Uh-huh.
Like, because brown is not easy. I feel like brown and probably, like, purple are really hard for painters. But it's really overt in some places, but like it really is like kind of creeping into almost all the paintings. Like, I didn't notice until I had this on the wall for like 3 days the way it was creeping in the wash basin on the right, and it's doing that in a lot of them. Like, sort of, where did that move come from for you?
Brown, my attraction to brown.
Well, we can just have a chat about brown if you want, but like that particular moment of like if it's seeping in on the edges of paintings where like you wouldn't expect brown in that.
I just think that I think brown is such a important color to have in a painting. It's such a grounding color. It's such a rich, or some browns can be so rich and so warm, and almost like inviting in a way. And I do almost see using brown and using some browns as like a wood element or almost like a human element or something that could be alive, some kind of life that could have been there. So I think this painting, the brown was one of the last things I did. And before I put that in there, it was so like Easter Martha Stewart catalog. And like I needed to just like shit on it a little bit, you know? I needed to just put something in there so it's a little more grounded in a way. And I'm also just naturally like attracted to that color, browns and greens, purples and things like that. I'm naturally just sort of attracted to that palette. So I'll notice myself, that's the can of spray paint that I'll grab, or that's the I have all my paint tubes set out in a flat rack and then in a standing rack. And that's the like area that I go to in the standing rack where all my browns are so often, just to grab something anytime I need to add paint to a surface. I'll, you know, look at the browns first and, oh, you know, maybe I've used too much yellow ochre or too much, you know, burnt umber on this painting, so maybe I'll go over here and use something else.
I think it's just I want to paint this color. Also, like yellow, like I made 3 yellow paintings this year, 2 of which are in the show, that little one over there and this one, and although this one like, doesn't look too much like a yellow painting anymore. I thought it was so yellow when I was working on it. I was like, how am I going to get back from this? But the other one is a larger painting, bigger than this one, that's almost all yellow. And I'm kind of happy it didn't go on the show because I was looking at it before we drove up here and it's like, I don't know. This can't be shown. Abby loves that painting.
It's a happy painting.
It's a happy painting.
Yeah.
But... it maybe needs more brown. Yeah, I should take it back in. Put more brown in it.
Rose just solved your problem.
I'm curious if you're like thinking about the issue of mood when you're like on the subject of like a happy painting. Like, mm-hmm. Do you think about trying to establish a particular like mood or emotional tenor in these paintings?
Some of them it might come in,
mm-hmm.
or based on the source image, I'll have a certain mood based on that image that I think will bleed into the painting. But most of the time, no. Most of the time, it's just I'm not necessarily trying to convey. I don't really want to box the viewer in with that kind of thing. That also goes to like the titles of all the paintings are just letters, like almost button mashing like letters, you know, just like whatever's in the studio. I'll look at something, oh, you know, DCF, cool, DCF, whatever, move on. And none of the titles mean anything, and it's because I don't want to like dictate that to the viewer. So I think if I did consider mood so heavily in that way, I wouldn't want someone to read that when they see the painting and think, oh, this is his sad painting. Like, oh, like, I have to be sad now looking at this painting. I don't want that. You can have whatever experience you want, and I want it to be so open to that you can have multiple experiences with it, and it will continue to feed you and lead you into new experiences.
Yeah. I guess like the one standout piece for me is this one in the back. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like the planar like dimension that you've been working in is sort of like moving in a different direction? Because this seems a bit more like three-dimensionally involved. Mm-hmm. Is there something like maybe that's changed in your reference images that like, cause it feels a bit more like
I think it's I don't think it's necessarily a change in the reference images. I think that it may be for that one, it's a change in the materials I painted with. So like I do use spray paint a lot, and I think spray paint is not so controlled as acrylic paint and can give this immediate in front of and behind moment very quickly. So when I put spray paint onto what was a flat tabletop, it turned it into this hole almost for me. So that was like that was something that I was considering in terms of dimension in that painting. Other paintings where I've done it like this one again, where it's down here. It seems like even though this is the bottom of like a washbowl, or like the face of a washbowl, it seems to be behind these blue stripes, and then the light blue that's next to it seems to also be behind that spray paint. So I think it's a change in material, or me using material to push dimension even further. And sometimes in the paintings I don't want to do that. I want it to be extremely flat, so I'll shy away from certain materials. But yeah.
And I think that's something I definitely notice in these more recent works, is like there's always like something slightly off about the way that you're rendering space in your paintings, like mm-hmm. a deliberate sense that it's like two clicks to the left of where mm-hmm. it should be. But I feel like now it's like 10 clicks to the left. Like, is that in front? Is that behind? What the heck is going on over there? And I think it's like really, you really have pushed that like mm-hmm. as hard as I think you've been wanting to push it. So mm-hmm.
that's something I tried to do in this one too, which this was like exploding with color. And it was more of what in my mind was like a traditional still life, whatever that means for me. And it was finished. And then I took it back in, looked at it and realized like, I need to tone this painting way down. So I took everything that I was attracted to, I preserved it, everything that I didn't like or that I even had the slightest like second thought on in terms of like color, I painted it black. So all like most of all these objects in the foreground and now that have blended into bulk objects were, you know, like little moments, little paintings and little things and you know, greens and blues and pinks that I had put in there. And whites, and now, you know, I just wanted to like tone it way back.
Which is funny because it's screamingly yellow and orange.
Yeah. That's like what I wanted to preserve, was this warm, warm palette, or like my kind of idea that I realized as I was working on this is this like warm palette encased in this like very rigid checkered frame. But I don't want it to be so rigid, so I added this like other double checker inside of the one on the top left, which I don't even know if people notice that, but like for me, just breaking that frame and making it a little like fucking it up and pushing it, like you said, one more click to the left or right sort of makes all the difference in the end.
And the just in terms of like sort of what's been going on in your practice in general, like this little pinwheel motif going on the lower left, that's actually in a lot of the paintings that you're working on right now. Where's that coming from? Like, how did that creep in?
I don't even know. I mean, candy? I don't know. Like, peppermints at diners that I go eat at? It's just like, again, structure. You know, and it's to me, that spiral is such an attractive thing, like this like Willy Wonka, you know, 70s like psychedelic spiral is just so attractive to me, and like I want to just like look at it, I want to push it, I want to use it more and more, so it seeps in.
Yeah, on the 70s tip, I would definitely say like in the last show there was like, I felt like in a certain way you were addressing like this notion of like a vintage feel, you know, and I think that makes sense. Like if you grow up, you know, in the 80s and 90s, but you're surrounded by mid-century modern furniture, like it's a very LA thing. I think that like sort of vintage moment, I don't feel that in these paintings, not even, not as much, but like at all. And yeah, I'm curious, like if that was something you were consciously trying to do, or if it was, if it's more just a consequence of having pushed the color so much.
I think it could have to do with pushing the color so much, but also I think it's just me. I think it has more to do with the fact that I'm working in the studio now, and that, and I'm just kind of realizing this now. It has to do with the fact that I'm working in the studio now, and the audience for the painting, for these paintings, has been like, before the opening last night and today, was like three people had seen them. You saw it, I saw it, maybe one other person, two other people, so four, you know. And so in that, I've had all this freedom to do whatever I want, to push it so far, and to look at source images less. And before, I would do things that maybe I thought Abby would want to see, you know, and like it would be totally subconscious, but I would know that I was doing it, you know, because she was the audience for those paintings. Or we're having a party at some point, so like I'm painting the studio, and I'm like, oh yeah, you know, when Jamad gets here, he's gonna love to see this, like do do do, and I'll knock in some other thing, you know. And so I'm realizing now that I'm in this other studio, I'm painting so alone, so removed. It's just like, this is like my brain. This is like what I want to see. So I think it has had a shift. I was scared that it wouldn't. I thought that like this show was just going to be like, oh, here's nine new paintings, you know, but like it's nice to see that like they have shifted a little bit.
A lot. Yeah, of course this prompts a question from Abby. Why aren't you painting for me anymore?
I was curious, sort of going off of that, if you feel like there are rules that you had in place for yourself that you didn't realize were necessarily there until you saw your work in that first show, and like maybe since then, you're like, yeah, I don't need to worry about that. That's not something I want to think about anymore.
Yeah, I think so. That's a good question. I think there definitely were standards and decisions I made that I felt like I couldn't go beyond. There was definitely rules that I set up for myself with like the way I was working for those years going up to that. The what? I don't even know. I would just use like more reduced, like a reduced palette. I was painting from a color wheel as well, so I have a color wheel in my studio, and I was using it a lot in that other studio where I would work on a painting, look at it, compare it to the color wheel, and say, okay, I'm on this side, I should put one thing from this side, let's this and that. And now that's kind of gone out the window. I still have the color wheel up in the studio, but I don't really use it. I don't really look at it. Now it's just more like psychotic, like just grabbing paints. So I think that could have been one of them, of just like
keep the paintings calm, make the paintings like successful, take your time on them. You know, now in the studio, I'm there, nothing else to do. I'm going crazy in that basement. And so I'm just like painting as fast as I can sometimes. So.
We're all.
Hi.
I like that you mentioned Jack Mendenhall because I think about him when I see your paintings.
Mm-hmm. You were in that class with me.
I was. Remember that trip. I remember him talking about his photorealistic paintings as a bunch of tiny abstractions that create this larger image.
Yeah.
I was wondering, like, if you saw your work in that area, because I don't think that they're like photorealistic, but I do think that generally the interiors, they still capture that same level of like attention to detail and to the objects in the space. Mm-hmm. I was wondering like what other parallels you could see like between his sort of work and yours.
I don't know. I think I don't know how close these paintings are to like the photorealism world, you know. It is something I'm attracted to. It's something I look at when I have the chance, but maybe if like photorealism is like the house, you know, I'm like my paintings are like the outhouse, you know. It's like I'm like it's still a structure, but like it's used for a completely different purpose, and it's like done, it's like it's like outside of the realm. It's, you know, not everybody wants to go there. And so it's like
but they need to sometimes.
We all need to go there sometimes, so. You need to interact with it. So so I think that yeah, maybe it's like making paintings outside of, or like, I don't want to say after photorealism, but just like making paintings like outside of that, but very close to it, or not very close to it, just like close to it in a way.
I don't know. Like when you said it, I just remembered seeing his work and like the vibrancy of the colors and the composition, the way he would look at things, and just like I'm thinking now that like maybe he was on acid making these. These are the acid.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
But I don't know. I was surprised that you said it.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think another big difference between him and I too is that he is this like master of color and so closely considers that and taught us color theory. And I took another color theory class, and in the class, you know, whatever point I was at mentally when I was, you know, in art school, I kind of told myself one day, I was like, I don't think I'm gonna really pay attention to this color theory thing. because I noticed this professor I had that was teaching it, and Jack Mendenhall too, it was his life, and like it made him amazing paintings, you know, but I still wanna see what royal blue looks like next to brown, or like what royal blue looks like next to, you know, teal, and like see how that happens, and not only like see it on a study, I want to see it on a finished painting, you know.
Well, maybe you have an innate understanding of color theory because those sound like they are complementary to me.
I couldn't think of two colors that wouldn't work together in my mind, because I think they all, I think they all. They all go together. I want everything to be like. This is not. I used to have a color wheel as my background on my phone, but then it was like distracting. Like I wouldn't open my phone because I was like, oh look, you know, well, that's great. Just somewhere in New York City.
Well, I was also thinking about the relation to photorealism. You know, you've got this strong pull of abstraction in your work, and then photorealism. That's rare that those two things. Mm-hmm. Exist, or that gap is spanned, but I keep coming back to these materials where, you know, like Grant said, this is like a looser, more casual show, I feel like, your mm-hmm. touch than the last one. Mm-hmm. But there's also these moments that are photorealistic, almost like Trump Loy, and I think of those effects as sort of erasing any sort of brushstroke. Mm-hmm. Or erasing any sort of evidence of the hand, but like that geode and the glass bases back there, it's like mm-hmm. they are Trump Loy photorealistic, but they're also just like a single
Yeah.
Brushstroke, where they're like a collection of impressionist brushstrokes almost.
Yeah.
So just wondering if that comes about in the studio, or if you sort of recognize those objects and those materials as like, oh, this is a sort of an occasion for abstraction in the same way that a framed abstract painting on the wall becomes, you know, another occasion for that type of painting.
I think that's exactly what it is. We're looking at somewhere along the way in the process of making these paintings, when I've had the large areas knocked in and it comes time to, you know, start playing around and painting in all these smaller areas, my mind will start racing with like sources that are just, you know, cooped up in there. Some of them are like trompe-l'oeil things, because like I looked at murals a lot. I used to do graffiti, so I was looking at that kind of stuff and being very up close to murals and seeing how trompe-l'oeil was painted and seeing what you could do with the value shift around a corner and things like that. And so I think that certain shapes, certain parts of geometry, certain parts of paintings will call out to me like, oh, do that transparent dry brush technique, you know, or like, oh no, paint this a solid color, you know, make a window in here. And so it's just it does happen in the studio, and I am thinking about that a lot, because that's kind of the joy of these paintings, is after it is broken down, and I can say to myself, like, I've always wanted to paint polka dots, purple polka dots, wash them out. Let's see what happens. Let's try it. So.
Henry?
I was curious to hear, like, all of the different ways that you think about the paintings, like, in your paintings. Because there were some examples of that in the last show that you had here, and there are, like, more than one example of that in this show. And, I mean, you said that this one, like, I want to make that painting now, so it's, like, almost like a sketch, but I don't know, I get the feeling that, like, not all of them are just, like, sketches for paintings to come. Or maybe they are, and just how you're thinking about that.
Yeah, it's just, it's like another area where that's a painting that like I'm very attracted to, that little painting within that painting. And that's my favorite part of that larger painting, is the painting. And so I would like to, you know, peel that off and put it right here on the wall next to that. However, if that did happen and I do make those paintings in my studio, but they never leave my studio, no one ever sees them. Because it's something so personal for me to like make a small, fully abstract paintings. Like I have like five paintings that are like this muddy kind of brown thing in my studio, this exact size. One looks almost exactly like that. And, you know, I didn't show Grant when he came, and like, I don't show anybody. And they're like face into each other, like in a rack in the corner. And so, but like I pull them out all the time. And if I'm going to be doing something on the computer, I'll put it up on the wall, or I'll just have them around when I'm painting. So it is like a deeply personal moment for me to make those. And in a way, or like at times I do think that the rest of that painting is there so that I can put that in the world. In a way, it's like a one like pure moment around other pure moments disguised as a room.
Yeah. And it's like, it's funny to me because I wouldn't say that the abstract paintings you're making are studies. It's not like one is a study or a sketch for the other, but if it was running one direction, for me, it would almost be more that you're making these abstracts so that you can put them in, rather than that would be a study for something that could subsequently be severed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Any other questions, comments, thoughts?
Concerns.
Yeah. Some people are shy. Henry will hang around for a minute.
Let's talk.
Everybody's like, how much time do you have?
Well, thank you so much, everybody, for coming. We'll hang out for a bit, so if people want to ask Henry questions separately. But I'm so thrilled everybody came out today. I'm so thrilled with the show. Eat these donuts so I don't eat them.
Uh-huh.
And thanks, Henry.
Thank you.